This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way. Hey, listeners, host Matthew here, and this episode is brought to you by Kahlua, and we have a live show coming up in just 2 days, 2 days from now, if you're listening to this on the day it comes out. That is this weekend, Saturday, October 13th at 3 p.m., and it's in Seattle at the Kahlua Cold Brew Cafe pop-up in Pioneer Square. So come hang out, see the show, and try some Kahlua Cold Brew cocktails. It's obviously 21 and over. Tickets are going to be $5, and you can get them right now by going to RethinkColdBrewCafe.com. That's RethinkColdBrewCafe.com. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace.
Squarespace makes it easier than ever to launch your website, whether you're, like, selling stuff or showing off your photography, whatever.
Just being you.
Yeah.
Right? And if you do get stuck, Squarespace's 24/7 customer support is there to unstick you.
When you are ready to get started, go to squarespace.com/spilled for a free trial.
And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SPILLED to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. This episode is brought to you by Just Crack an Egg.
Has your relationship with breakfast felt a little strained lately?
Yeah, I mean, it's just too much work for a weekday.
Yeah, Matthew. Well, then it's time to head over to the egg aisle and pick up Just Crack an Egg.
What is that?
It's a hot, fluffy scramble that's ready in less than 2 minutes.
Okay, I'm going to do it. I'm just going to add a fresh egg over the chopped veggies, shredded cheese, hearty meat, and potatoes, and then stir it, microwave it, and reignite my love of breakfast. I'm Matthew.
And I'm Molly.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
Today, we are talking about leeks, which are probably all over your local markets now, here it being October 11th when this show airs.
And they may also be all over your coat of arms, which we're going to talk about in a minute, yeah. Apparently.
All over your national emblem.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's... Okay, we'll talk about what's...
We'll get there.
Okay, so leeks. We did scallions recently,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and it made us think about... Well, we came away feeling very pro-scallion, as I recall. And it also made us think about leeks, which are kind of shaped like scallions, but bigger, but you use them in different ways, and they're all part of the same family.
They're more of like a two-handed broadsword versus like a foil. This is all I know about swords. Sorry.
Or an épée.
An épée, yeah. Yes, so a scallion is like an épée. It's kind of floppy. It's you know, there's the floppy swords.
Is this going to be like a show where we then go on location and we learn how to fence or something?
This episode?
Yes. Like, it's talking about an épée.
I mean, for all people know, that is what we're going to do. This is an audio show, and which means it's mostly lies.
Okay. Great. All right.
Yeah.
So, Matthew.
Video. Everything on video is 100% true.
But on audio,
nope. It's lies.
Yeah. All right, Matthew, please tell me about your memory lane of scallions.
Leeks.
Oh.
I don't remember. I think I knew leeks existed when I was a kid, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't remember ever eating them. This is one of those things that I think I first had in my 20s.
Like, I feel like this is like a grown-up food that children are at least in our childhoods, were sheltered from.
Yeah, I mean,
this was something that happened in the kitchen, but you didn't talk about it.
Exactly. You know, like things that happened in the kitchen with broadswords, floppy swords, all kinds of stuff. My daughter did want me to mention that she loves leeks, but like that doesn't prove anything because she's my kid. So
yeah, I think that I knew of this thing called potato leek soup.
Yes, I did too.
But I don't remember ever eating it as a kid. And I've always kind of felt suspicious of potato soups. It seems just like weird and too thick, like broccoli cheddar soup. Like
I'm these so glad soups. You said that. Broccoli cheddar soup sounds real tasty to me. The potato soups, I tend to feel the same way. Unless, I mean, it can be done with sort of like a French finesse that where it's simultaneously creamy and light.
Yes.
But like when you just say potato soup, it sounds stodgy.
It does. It does. I remember also, so, just to bring the show down.
Oh,
when my father was dying.
Uh-huh. It's one of my favorite segments on the show. Molly brings it down.
When my father was ill, a lot of my parents' friends and things like that were bringing food over. And I remember one of them brought over like a big Tupperware of potato leek soup. Mm-hmm. And it was good, but there was a lot of it. And I think that there weren't like a lot of us in the house at the time. There were like waves of family members coming. And so I remember we put it in the freezer. You should never freeze potato soup. It gets like really weird and like the liquid separates.
Isn't that funny how there are some
things? Also, there was like dairy in it, of course, and that behaved strangely when it was thawed out. It was real weird.
Yeah, if I knew more about chemistry, I would be able to explain why some things get real weird when you freeze them.
Yeah. I think we should just... I lost my train of thought.
Okay. We should do an episode where we put a bunch of things in the freezer one week and then take them out the next week and see what happened.
Yeah.
That sounds very exciting.
Oh, look, it's frozen.
Yeah, cool.
No,
it got like hard and cold.
I think the first...
serving temperature, hard and cold.
Is that ice cream cones?
Ice cream cones, yeah.
Yeah. No, that was dry and hard.
Dry.
Wait, no, dry and cold.
Cold and dry. Cold yes, and dry. Serving temperature, dry.
Anyway, I think that the first time I really remember eating leeks, especially in a situation like where it was all about the leeks, was when I was living with a host family in France.
Mm-hmm.
And they served, I think my host mother had steamed leeks. I'm trying to remember whether she boiled them or steamed them. But anyway, she had steamed them and then served them with vinaigrette.
Sounds
and,
good.
Yeah, and we had this. So, you know, she would frequently serve like something like half a grapefruit as like the beginning of our meal at dinner.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Like half a grapefruit or some like beet salad with vinaigrette or grated carrots with vinaigrette or leeks vinaigrette. And then we would move on to like the main course.
Something with a crisp hit of acidity.
Yes. Yeah. And then we'd do the main course, then a green salad and then cheese and then dessert. This was every night.
That's exactly what I imagine France to be like.
But I have to imagine this is dying out now. I mean, fast food is almost as prevalent there and like convenience foods. I mean, certainly we've talked about Picard les surgelés.
Yes, we
the
certainly
entire
have.
Store of high-end frozen foods. Like France is
that is
right
probably
on our heels in terms
like,
of interest in convenience foods.
Do you think that's the most sexy phrase in any language on earth?
Yes,
I think it is.
Do you want me to say it again?
Yeah, please.
Picard les surgelés. I have to whisper it though.
And all it means is Picard the frozen food.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway,
it sounds like there's surgery involved, which shouldn't be sexy. And yet.
And yet. I mean, well, surgeons, very confident people, right? Surgeons are, well, they're also known.
Maybe overconfident sometimes.
Yeah. Anyway, while we're just trafficking in stereotypes,
please.
Let's continue on with the show.
How I don't know. I believe like, you know, maybe this is a tradition that's dying out. But I think like, you know, the French, like they clinging to tradition is what they do.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And I have to believe like in the same way that like I've, you know, spent time staying with a family in Japan and just had like night after night amazing Japanese home cooking that this lives on at least in some homes in France.
I have to believe it does.
And if nothing else, even if they like go to the fucking McDonald's drive-thru and go back with their Royales with cheese or whatever, but then like serve like a nice ripe camembert after that,
yeah.
like a green salad and a cheese plate after that.
I could see this happening.
That's good enough for me.
I could see this happening. I mean, frankly, even the really cheap cheeses, like at the chain grocery store, like Monoprix or whatever, like the 1 euro log of goat cheese is delicious. So I believe that even if everything, you know, goes to hell and France is nothing but a vast sea of surgelé
during the next ice age,
it's still going to be delicious.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that is actually, you just hit on like one of my least favorite things about staying in Japan, is that the cheese is terrible.
Yeah, that's a big bummer.
Yeah.
That's a big bummer.
Pretty much everything else is incredibly delicious, yeah. So it's okay.
Okay, but anyway, I remember, so I became quite enamored with Leek's vinaigrette, and for a while afterward, in what I fondly think of as my real Francophile phase...
Real Franco.
In like my early 20s, I cooked a lot of leeks at home, a lot of like steamed leeks vinaigrette.
So what kind of vinaigrette do you put on that?
So I have for about the past 15 years been making the same vinaigrette all the time.
Did I know this about you?
You don't know this about me?
Maybe I do.
It's so it's a red wine vinaigrette, mm-hmm. and it just has 4 ingredients. 1 tablespoon of like a really good strong Dijon mustard. Mm-hmm. I don't really like Grey Poupon for this. It's too winey.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Anyway, 1 tablespoon of Dijon mustard, 3 tablespoons red wine vinegar. Sometimes I use white wine vinegar. And then like 6 to 7 tablespoons of olive oil. You have to kind of do it by taste. And 1/2 teaspoon of kosher salt.
That sounds perfect.
And this is what I do every time. In my first book, I wrote about this vinaigrette recipe, but I called for I called for starting with 5 tablespoons of olive oil and adding up from there, because vinaigrettes really do differ in like strength. But now I would say I use 6 to 7 of olive oil most of the time.
How do you choose this is like not a setup for a joke. This is just a serious food question. How do you choose a red wine vinegar? Because I feel like most of them are just kind of okay.
Well, I try to choose ones that actually have red wine as an ingredient. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's a good place to start. And I generally don't buy like the cheapest one at the grocery store,
because
that's usually like just... like
sort of Kool-Aid.
Yeah. I also don't buy the most expensive. I sort of go somewhere down the middle of the road.
Oh, geez, I don't buy the most expensive anything.
That looks like it's real.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. All right.
Yeah.
Vinegar mouth.
Yeah. Anyway, but so that is my vinaigrette for everything. I keep it on my kitchen counter in a little mason jar and...
Just all the time?
All the time.
I did not know about your little kitchen friend.
My little kitchen friend. It's always there.
Do you have any other concoctions in mason jars in your laboratory?
No. Okay. No, just my vinaigrette.
Just vinaigrette. Wow. Yeah. It's that important.
And every now and then Ash will put it in the fridge. I think like it probably seems weird that I would leave this slurry of stuff out on the counter for literally weeks at a time. But I think it would be pretty darn hard for anything to grow in there. There's a lot of acidity.
Yeah. I agree.
So anyway, I'm not too worried about it.
Have you ever tried to smuggle it into a restaurant where you thought the vinaigrette was subpar?
Like people with their little like lip balm containers filled with Malden salt.
Yeah.
No, I haven't. It has not come to that.
I feel like
if ever there were a time when I would have considered such a thing or thought it was important, I feel like that time might have passed, and I feel grateful for that.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Like one of my favorite things that ever happened on Seinfeld, a show that is very problematic to go back to, is when the waiter at the diner said, "We don't allow any outside syrups or condiments." And then I was watching Parks and Rec rerun last night, and the same thing happened.
Really?
Rob Lowe tried to bring some condiment into the steakhouse. And they said, "You need to stop doing that."
Oh, wow.
For some reason, I find this so funny.
And the only place that I do this is, as you know, I sometimes take maple syrup when I'm going out to have pancakes. I'm such a jerk. Yeah.
Okay.
But so, I buy my maple syrup at Costco. So what does it all say about me?
I buy mine at Trader Joe's, like the tall glass bottle.
Trader Joe's is way better, but the Costco jug I have just, it never gets empty.
Oh, yeah. No. The Trader Joe's is relatively expensive as far as Trader Joe's things go.
It's the $16.99 one with like the putty colored plastic and the red lid.
From the Costco?
No, from Trader Joe's.
Oh, the Trader Joe's I get is the one in the tall glass bottle, but it's about the same unit price, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think about unit prices so often.
You do?
Like, do you look at unit prices when you look at
Do you mean like per ounce? Tags?
Yeah, I look at them all the time.
I look at them frequently, Okay. Yeah, but probably not as much as you do.
Every time I buy anything, pretty much.
I'm trying to think of when was the last time I looked at a unit price.
I think I bought a jar of peanut butter the other day and like I couldn't tell like one size was on sale and one wasn't.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is a really cool conversation. Yeah. Let's talk about leeks.
Okay. Tell me, I understand you learned a thing or two about leeks.
I learned some things.
From the cloud.
Yeah. So leeks are a cultivar of Matthew. Would you please pronounce this?
The cultivar of Matthew.
Allium.
Ampelope. Praisum.
Okay. Which is, according to Wikipedia, the broadleaf wild leek. And I thought, oh, I know about wild leeks. Ramps, right? Well, no, they're different.
Yeah. I mean, ramps are called wild leeks, but yeah. I think someone just thought that was fun to say.
The scientific name, what's the name? What do you call it?
Yeah, the scientific name.
The scientific name for ramps is Allium tricoccum.
Or tricoccum?
Tricoccum. Tricoccum?
You'll like them.
Okay.
Anyway. I mean, not everybody.
So leeks are a cultivar of Allium ampelopraisum.
Oh, I like that. That sounds good. Ampelopraisum.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, whatever. They're related, as we all know, they're related to onions, scallions, garlic, all these are all alliums.
Yeah, but I think of them as a bit of an outlier. I mean, maybe not as much of an outlier as garlic, but like they look so much like a scallion or a Welsh onion or something. But
what the heck's a Welsh onion?
Oh, it's a negi.
Oh,
we went on the scallion.
A Japanese leek.
Yes.
Wow. So hold on, a Welsh onion.
Yes, which is not
is negi is Japanese
leek. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, this is very confusing. So wait, why do you think of leeks as being, are leeks more of an outlier in the allium family to you than scallions?
Yeah, because like scallions and negi and ramps are, I think of all being all pretty similar in the sense that they're like long and greenish and relatively tender.
Okay.
But leeks, like they've got so much body to them. So much fiber, so much guts.
Which onions do too, though.
That's true, but onions become melting. I guess leeks do
leeks
too.
I don't know.
You caught me in a logical bind here.
Yes, yes. Okay, so hold on. Let's talk about this because this is interesting.
Leeks are the broadsword of the allium family. I'm sticking with that.
Instead of forming a bulb, like an onion, so leeks produce this long cylinder of bundled leaf sheaths. It's not a stalk. It's not a stem. It's a whole bunch of like leaf sheaths.
Uh-huh. Which is true
of scallions.
How's
that different from like a leaf?
Well, I think it's describing a particular shape of leaf. Leaves come in lots of different shapes in nature.
Well, these are kind of like blade leaves.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and alliums are monocots, which mean they form like leaves with parallel veins.
Oh, okay. This makes sense.
Like grasses and stuff.
Oh, cool. Okay. Well, so the reason why, so you mentioned that, you know, you think of leeks as being tougher or sort of
gutsier.
Gutsier.
I think I said.
Yeah. Okay. Well, in part to counter that tendency, maybe, as leeks have been cultivated, people have learned to do what's called blanching them. This is not where you cook them quickly in really hot water.
Good, because that's what I thought you meant.
No, no, no. This is where you cover them up with soil.
Oh,
Like what's done with endive, right? Don't people sort of mound soil around
Is this Endive? Why? Yes. And is this why both of those things are pretty expensive? Both Leeks and Endive are pretty expensive as far as produce goes?
I have no idea.
That sounds labor intensive.
Well, yeah. I mean, it does, because you would have to go around to each stalk and basically cover it with soil, which is called blanching them, because when you protect them from getting sunlight, you prevent photosynthesis, and it keeps them white and it keeps them more tender.
But it also fills them with dirt.
Yes, we're going to get to that, Matthew.
You know how maybe you could economize on the farm? You know who loves building like little hills of dirt? Children.
Children. I was thinking of ants. Ants make ant hills.
Yes.
Maybe.
Speaking of ants.
Yes.
Okay, sorry. Got to go on a tangent again. You mentioned on a recent episode, possibly.
Oh, seeing a giant writhing ant hill.
Well, and then you talked about how June was scared of soldier ants.
Yes.
Because of a story or something.
Yeah, that was read to her in the aftercare program at school.
Can you look into this further, please? Because one of our listeners had the same thought that I did, which was this story Leiningen versus the ants?
I don't know.
Which is a famous classic short adventure story, but it is so radically inappropriate for a preschool audience that if that's what it was, I'm going to be so entertained.
Okay.
It is a terrifying story in which like a guy gets bitten all over his body by ants, and ants eat a deer down to its bones. And
I don't know that that's what this was.
I don't think that's what it was.
I doubt that's what this was.
Okay.
But I'm kind of wondering if it's more like they were reading some sort of a book that had
like pictures of different insects or something. Okay.
Probably.
That's probably it. But mm-hmm. God, I want it to be that terrifying story about ants. Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace.
Squarespace has made it easier than ever before to launch the perfect website.
Wow. The perfect website. It's like the perfect size typeface, the perfect...
No, that's all you need is the perfect size typeface. Okay. And whatever typeface you choose, and believe me, they have many to choose
from. It's going to feel perfect.
And I mean, do people say typeface? They just say font, right?
They just say font.
I mean, like, fancy people like us say typeface.
Yeah, but the photos, they're gonna look perfect.
They're gonna pop.
They're gonna load quickly. It's gonna be optimized for mobile right out of the box. There's gonna be nutching. There's gonna be nothing to patch or upgrade ever, because this website is gonna be perfect.
Yes, it's going to be literally perfect. Nutching will go wrong. And you're going to make that perfect website with a free trial by going to squarespace.com/spilled.
And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code spilled to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain.
That's squarespace.com/spilled, offer code spilled. Squarespace, nothing can stop you. This episode is brought to you by Sweet Tango Apples. And I am sitting here with friend of the show, Iris Amster-Burton, who is crunching a Sweet Tango apple while I'm trying to do this ad. And I asked for a bite, and she looked at me like, get your own apple.
It's true.
So Sweet Tango Apples, every time you bite into one, it releases juice, it releases the loudest apple crunch you've ever heard, and it's really hard to stop eating one. You can try them sliced into salads. You can put them on sandwiches. You can eat them with cheese. How do you like to eat a Sweet Tango apple, Iris?
I love apples with peanut butter spread on them. I think that's an excellent way to eat them. I'm also eating one whole right now, and it's excellent.
Yep. And they are also great in apple crisp. So taste it for yourself and see why this apple has fans that literally wait for it to come back every fall. You can go to sweettango.com/spilledmilk to find a grocer near you. And this is a true story. I like these apples so much. They sent us some, but I went to the website, sweettango.com/spilledmilk, and found that, they're sold at the supermarket right near me, and I'm going to go get some more. So that's sweettango.com/spilledmilk.
As you've probably noticed when you're cooking with Leeks,
yes,
of course, the most tender part, and it also has like It has the thinnest, most tender leaves. It also has the sweetest flavor. The mildest part of the flavor is the white part of the leek, right? The light green part is also edible. It's a little bit tougher, a little bit stronger in flavor. And then the dark green part is really quite tough, and people often discard it or use it in stock.
Can I tell you something I do when I am like trimming up, prepping leeks that I think... I feel like I might have learned from Chef Jerry Traunfeld of Poppy and Lionhead in Seattle, maybe at a farmer's market demo years ago, is like I will cut the leaves off, the dark green leaves off, like a little higher than you would think. Mm-hmm. So there's some green at the top. Mm-hmm. And then kind of roll the knife around like an inch or so down from there and take off just that outer green, like thick green leaf.
Okay.
And expose more of like the white tender stuff inside, and you get a little more usage. What do you call it? A little more...
You get bang for your buck.
You get a little more bang for your buck.
You know, as you're talking, it occurs to me, I wonder if somehow, like, I we should...
Yes?
So... I'm realizing that there are probably a lot of listeners of the show who actually grow leeks. And I'm kind of...
A lot is a strong word.
But anyway, I'm wondering if you really do have to go around and mound up the dirt around the leek.
I think there's enough.
Or if they grow that way, like partially underground. I mean, certainly they're not like a carrot that grows with the edible part fully underground.
No. So, I mean, they got like you know, a little bundle of leaves sticking up, right?
Right. But like, once they start to germinate, do people go around and pile more dirt on top of it? Or does it just naturally, like, do you plant the seed, like, 8 inches under the ground so that part will stay under there?
Maybe there's a YouTube video we could watch where this is shown in real time. The video is, like, 6 weeks long.
Yeah. I can't wait.
No, seriously. No, that's a good question. Like, listeners, if you grow leeks, facebook.com/spilledmilkpodcast, do you have to go around mounting dirt on them if you want them to come out right?
Yeah. Because, I mean, you would think that if you really had to pay that much attention to them, that we would see a lot of leeks in, like, farmer's markets or something that were just all green.
Yeah.
Like just people use them differently or something.
Oh, speaking of listener feedback... just before we sat down to record this, I got an email from listener Chris, who we were talking on a recent episode about how we think pipe organs are really awesome and we want to get an invitation to play a pipe organ. Listener Chris did not offer us an invitation to play a pipe organ.
But I don't know why we're even talking about this.
His job is building pipe organs.
Where does he
building
live?
Building and maintaining, I think like Virginia or something. So, but he probably has like a network of pipe organ people.
Hold on. Do you remember in the ice cream cone episode, we talked about, is it Dumars or something? Where people say like the ice cream cone was invented, or Abe Dumar.
Yes, I remember you talking about
isn't
this.
Isn't that in Virginia?
I could be misremembering. Oh, to the
drive
the birthplace
or whatever,
of the ice cream cone.
Go to Dumars, I think that's what it's called, and then also go play a pipe organ at Chris's place.
Yeah, I mean, if someone makes guitars, they've got tons of guitars around their house.
Yeah,
how many
this guy
pipe
for sure
organs?
Has a lot of pipe organs.
Yeah, he's probably got
around.
Like 15 pipe organs hanging around in his garage.
This is exciting.
Okay, so we will link to listener Chris's pipe organ building business. So like, I'm going to just put it out there. If you need a pipe organ constructed or maintained, hire listener Chris.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
Full endorsement.
I'm going to keep talking about leeks now. So anyway, okay. Leeks have been around for a long time.
I think I would have guessed that.
They first made an appearance in the Hebrew Bible, and dried leeks, as well as like wall carvings and drawings of leeks, have been found in archaeological sites from ancient Egypt.
When you say dried... What does a dried leek look like after like 4,000 years?
God, how can you distinguish it from like dust?
Yeah, that's a thing I always wonder. Like when you hear about like archaeological finds, like I just know. I mean, I guess that's why they're archaeologists and we're not. But I just know if we went in there, like into like if we raided a tomb, like Lara Croft. We would get in there and it would be just like, you know, well, this looks like it could be like a cup and the rest of this all looks like garbage.
Yeah. Yeah, or like,
and then like,
or like, what are these like small animal fossils in the sarcophagus with the mummy? It must have been like a roasted chicken that was buried with this person as like an offering.
I need to go update my will right now.
Anyway,
a chicken in every casket.
Sarcophagus.
Correction noted.
All right. These were grown in Mesopotamia from the beginning of the second millennium BCE.
Nice.
Yeah. And here's my favorite part.
Okay.
This was the favorite vegetable of the Emperor Nero, who ate it in soup or in oil, believing it beneficial to the quality of his voice. What a monster he was.
Wait, what? No, I mean, he was a monster, but not for that reason, right?
I know.
What, should we be doing that? Like, if I was eating leeks in oil before every taping, would I not sound like this?
Think of how mellifluous you could be.
Yes.
You know, before we karaoke the next time, I'm going to eat some leeks.
Yeah, let's take
soup,
the leek cure.
Or oil.
Or both.
Yeah.
Or like an oily soup.
Yum. All right. So, leeks are also one of the national emblems of Wales.
Okay. I'm so excited to talk about this.
Great. Here we go. I get to pronounce some things poorly. According to legend, King Cadwallader of Gwynedd.
Oh, okay. So, right. So, I think...
Are you going to try to pronounce that better?
I was going to try, but see, so I think most of these letters are silent. That's based on what I know about Welsh. Oh. It's spelled Cadwallader. All I can say confidently is that it is not pronounced Cadwallader.
Okay. Well, anyway, he was of Gwynedd, and he ordered his soldiers to identify themselves by wearing the vegetable on their helmets in an ancient battle against the Saxons that took place in a leek field.
What does that look like?
Right? A whole bunch of soldiers in a field running around with leeks. How did they attach them to their helmets?
Well, you know those like Prussian helmets with the spike on top?
Yes.
I assume something like that.
Okay. All right. So in contrast to this, here's another sort of origin story. The Elizabethan poet Michael Drayton stated that the tradition was a tribute to Saint David, who only ate leeks when he was fasting.
That is not fasting, first of all.
Yeah, that is. Well, do you think it was like a precursor to juice fasting, leek fasting?
Yes, I think so. I went past a juice place that had like a big ad out front for like their juice fast pack. I guess that's every juice place.
It is. Whatever the case, Shakespeare refers to the custom of wearing a leek as an ancient tradition in Henry V. In this play, Henry tells the Welsh officer Fluellen that he, too, is wearing a leek. Quote, "For I am Welsh, you know, good countryman." End
this
quote.
Absolutely sounds like a pickup line, right?
For I am Welsh,
like,
you
hey,
know.
Fluellen.
I am Welsh, you know.
I'm wearing the leek.
Good countryman.
You know, I'm Welsh. Good, real good countryman. You know what I'm saying?
The 1985 and 1990 British £1 coins bear the design of a leek in a coronet representing Wales.
Oh, that sounds great.
Right?
And we learned recently that a coronet is an ice cream cone,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so there's a leek in an ice cream cone.
Oh, wow. Yep. That is what I want on my coat of arms.
Listeners, please, if you can find a 1985 or 1990 £1 British coin with a leek in an ice cream cone, please
contact
send it to us.
At spilledmilkpodcast.com.
Matthew, what would be on your national emblem if you were a nation?
I mean, I kind of just want that now that I know that you can have a leek and an ice cream cone. So I think like some kind of noodle for sure.
Would it be in a bowl or just a pile?
I mean, lately, like I have a sticker that's a bowl of ramen on my computer. And also my family gave me like a painting of a bowl of ramen.
Yeah.
So I think maybe like a bowl of ramen.
Okay.
And, well, I do like ice cream a lot.
Yeah,
so,
I do
so
too.
So maybe like a sort of a generic pint container that just says like super duper chocolate, like too much chocolate. death by chocolate is the fate that you face if you go up against my family.
Okay. Okay. Huh. Okay.
How about you?
I'm thinking this over. I feel like a milkshake would not be out of place.
Yeah, I think the trick there is... Oh,
how do you designate milkshake, though?
I've got
it's just
it.
Like
so
a cup.
So first of all, it's like a cup with a little metal cup next to it.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, from like the old fashion blender.
Yes, and it could alternatively or in addition have like the little milkshake blender with the whizzy attachment.
Okay, that's a great idea. Okay, so I think probably a milkshake and...
I don't know how many elements you're supposed to have on your seal crest.
I don't know.
I think seal crest is a brand of... linens or something, right?
Yeah, I think it's like a brand of towels.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave it there. I'm not sure what else to do.
I'm not sure what else you need in life other than a milkshake.
That's true. I feel like I want something with meat. Mm-hmm. It's just hard to say what.
Like a burger?
Maybe a burger.
Yeah,
maybe a burger.
That would be, it would read really well, like at a distance as your army yeah. is encroaching. Like, we'll see, like, okay, it's the burger. They've got a burger and like some sort of cup. It's probably the Weisenberg clan.
Yeah. And I feel like it would be fitting to, like, you know, if people couldn't really remember what my last name was, but they knew the word burger. It's like it kind of,
good.
You know, it's like an echo to my last name, Weisenberg Burger. Yeah.
Yes. I didn't think about that. Yeah. That's so smart.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about what we actually do with leeks. Matthew, okay. So we now know why they're so dirty.
Because people keep putting dirt on them.
Yeah. So how
vandals.
How do you wash yours?
Okay. I don't know where I was taught this, but what I do is, I'll trim the top, as I mentioned earlier. And then I will slice it, halve it lengthwise.
Yes.
And then run it under cold water while kind sort of peeling the layers apart and letting water run through them.
Yeah. I think that is the best policy.
Sometimes, thank you.
Sometimes if I'm like, if I'm cutting leek into small pieces, like small rounds for soup or for leek confit, which we'll talk about here in a second, I will take all of my chopped up leek and put it in the basket of a salad spinner.
Oh, yeah.
And just soak it in cold water, a couple changes of water. But I find that even then, like, if you're not allowing the water to sort of run directly onto the dirty part, sometimes it just sticks.
Yeah, and you don't want that, like, bit of grit.
So
I don't own a salad spinner, but they're so cool.
I love
used
salad
to,
spinners.
And I think I got rid of it because it took up a lot of space and I didn't use it enough, and now I want it again.
I've had one my whole life. Like ever since I was a baby.
Mm-hmm. You had a little salad spinner and a little teeny tiny like baby food jar of vinaigrette. Yeah. It was so cute. And with your little coat of arms.
Yeah. Too bad.
That's what would be on your coat of arms is a jar of vinaigrette.
Perfect. Okay. So Matthew, what's this Bon Appetit thing you found?
So I went on trying to sort of jog my memory of like what leek things I like and or make. And the first thing I found when I probably just Googled leek recipes was a recent Bon Appetit roundup that we will link to that has the headline 27 leek recipes that are like onions who?
Ugh.
And then the subhead began, leeks are cooler than onions. This made me so angry, but there were so many good recipes.
I feel like leeks, I don't know. I feel like I didn't see much leeks in America, like in recipes published in the United States until like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I feel like I thought of it as a French thing. I know that it also shows up all over the Middle East.
Yep. I know, but like that's...
I know it's big in Turkish cooking, but I feel like, you know, potato leek soup, vichyssoise, like it was a French thing.
Is that like a cold?
I don't think of like your like mainstream, like old American grandma, like out on the plains back in the day, like using leeks.
I don't think so, but you might have gathered ramps.
Oh,
maybe.
That's true.
Isn't there some like folksy term for ramps also, like hillbilly truffles or something?
Something like that. Anyway, okay, go on.
I forgot what the question was.
Oh, like I think.
Oh, like
of,
like did leaks suddenly
like
appear,
did they get big?
In like mainstream widespread American cuisine in the 90s? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Late 80s.
Great.
Maybe.
I'm glad we got to the bottom of that.
But that's when when good food entered the I mean, how to describe this in a way that that doesn't erase the fact that...
good food has always existed in this country in different populations.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that, you know, that you would start seeing things like leeks, like in a like newspaper food section.
Yes,
I guess.
Yes. I feel like it was the dawn of a era of like farmers markets and yeah. Sort of food as a trend.
Yeah, food as entertainment.
Yes.
Okay.
Leeks are entertaining.
Very entertaining.
Very entertaining.
I mean, that's hence this episode thus far.
I'm going to go out there and say I think leeks are the most delicious allium.
Oh, this is a good question. I didn't know I was...
I think scallions are your favorite, according to the scallion
probably
episode.
Probably scallions are my favorite. Is that what I said on the scallion episode? Yes, that is my foot.
I think so.
For sure.
Sorry.
yeah, I think scallions are my favorite. I use them every day, pretty much. Leeks. I do love a leek. They're a little more work than scallions, and
they're generally not eaten raw, so
right.
Maybe they're not quite as versatile.
Maybe, but I mean, when I started going through Bon Appetit's 27 leek recipes that made me say onions who, I was surprised at how many things are like, oh yeah, I like that, and I've made that.
So Matthew, what do you do with leeks?
Okay, so a couple of things that I love to do with leeks are to put them in an omelet, like saute or make like melted leek confit.
Mm-hmm. To use butter for that?
Yes,
yes,
and put it in an omelet.
I feel like leeks want butter.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, olive oil is fine, but that there's something about the sweet oniony flavor that is so, it wants butter.
Yep, and here's my other favorite thing. So, starting like maybe 3 or 4 years ago, maybe longer, who knows? As I've mentioned, I'm at the age where whenever I say like, oh yeah, that was 3 years ago, it turns out it was 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Pagliacci, local Seattle pizza chain, started doing a bacon leek primo, bacon leek slice at, you know, as a seasonal special.
Mm-hmm.
And with like chunks of leek and like thick chunks of bacon.
Mm-hmm.
And not like an olive oil base.
Oh.
And it's a real family favorite. And of course, naturally, like I immediately started making it at home.
I'm starving right now.
Oh, I already had lunch.
I did too, but it's time for my afternoon leek snack.
Okay. Yeah.
Too bad we don't have anything.
Nope.
Okay, well anyway, so, Matthew, I know that you and I have both made rigatoni with five lilies.
Yes.
Right?
And linked to it, we've mentioned it in probably more episodes than any other single recipe.
Yeah. So, it's a rigatoni recipe with five different members of the Allium family, mm-hmm. one of them being leeks.
Yeah.
So
that's a recipe from a guy we won't name.
Yeah. Although maybe we could find a way to link to it somewhere.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Okay. Also, I feel like, you know, leeks are, again, because leeks are so great with butter, leeks show up in a lot of like galettes and tarts and pastries,
yeah.
Like so good with that like buttery tart crust.
And I feel like that was a thing that I used to make
fairly
often I had a kid.
Yeah. I was into like savory tarts.
Yeah, me too.
I
there was this like tomato tart that I
yes,
used to make.
Me too.
Yeah. Why was I do? I mean,
I
they were
like,
good.
But I feel like this was for me. It makes sense because I do think that was an era when I was particularly into like being inspired by France and like mm-hmm. like French home cooking.
Yeah,
I don't understand why you were making these things.
Well, I mean, I'm known for my domestic rusticity, and I was making like, you know, rustic crostatas with like, you know, an irregular shape.
Oh my God, this sounds so good right now.
I know. I had like a large burger for lunch, and I'm getting hungry also.
I had some pasta with like ricotta and pesto stirred into
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Okay, wait, hold on. So, potato leek soup, I've never made it. Vichyssoise, that's cold potato leek soup.
Yes, which right? sounds, I know I've had it, like, probably had it, I seem to remember having like a little tiny cup of it as an amuse-bouche
yes.
at a French restaurant.
This is something that my dad was into. Like, if he saw it on the menu, he would order it.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, like, sounds so dire that it has to be good or no one would actually make it,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
like snails, for
like
example.
Like snails, yes. Okay, wait, hold on. What's kakaliki soup? You wrote
so
that
So kakaliki soup is a, I want to say British, but it could mean Scottish. I'm not sure. Like a chicken and leek soup.
Oh, Well, that makes sense.
But it's I only put it down because it's so fun to say.
Yeah.
Kakaliki soup.
I think the way I most often use leeks, probably even still today, is for leeks vinaigrette. Also, though, oh my gosh, like just taking leeks and cooking them in butter with maybe a little splash of water to help keep the pan from getting dry, mm-hmm. just cooking it for a long time, not until they caramelize, like it's they're not going to turn brown like caramelized onions.
Right,
you're waiting for them to just get so soft that they start losing their structural
their grip
integrity
on reality.
Yeah. Anyway, that is so good piled onto like a piece of toast with goat cheese
or piled onto anything.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know, I mean, you could put it in any kind of sandwich, you could put kind of blobs of it on a pizza.
Yeah, just go around just putting blobs of it on things.
I think I wrote about leek confit in Bon Appetit years ago.
Yes. Oh, did you write this article, 27 leek recipes that are like onions who?
Nope. All right. Also, oh my gosh.
You don't have to be modest.
Okay, sort of. So there have been a lot of leek recipes I've loved in recent cookbooks, like cookbooks that have come out in the past couple of years.
Tell me about this.
Melissa Clark's Dinner has a fantastic cookbook. I think it might be the cover photograph. It is harissa chicken. It's all cooked on a sheet pan with cubed potatoes and leeks.
Yes.
And then
that
you drizzle
great.
It with like a garlicky yogurt and all kinds of fresh herbs. It's so delicious.
Is it made with like bone-in chicken parts?
Yes,
okay,
exactly.
Yes. Okay, I'm in.
And then Julia Tertian, in her first book, Small Victories, her second book just came out last month.
Yes, Now and Again. Mm-hmm. Is that what it's called?
Yep. And she's actually going to be on the show.
Yes. Should we tease that yet?
Yeah, let's tease it.
Okay. We haven't taped it yet, so you never know what might happen. But, okay. We expect a little.
We expect the best.
Exactly.
Anyway, Julia Tertian, in her first book, Small Victories, has a recipe called Dad's Chicken and Leeks, which is basically just braised chicken parts with a lot of leeks.
That sounds
delicious.
Great.
Delicious.
Yeah. I make braised chicken a lot.
I don't.
It's the easiest thing, and it's always good.
Oh.
And you can
give
flavor
me some
it.
Of your will you link to, do you have any braised chicken recipes with leeks?
Not that I know of, but I bet we could link to a braised chicken recipe. Wait, how about this one? Well, no, but this is in Julia Tertian's book.
I think we can find some of these recipes online.
Okay.
And we'll find them. But in the meantime, Matthew,
off
the air, will you tell me about your braised chicken?
Oh, it's a secret?
Yeah. Don't tell the listeners because it doesn't have leeks in it.
Well, I mean, generally I will take bone-in chicken thighs and
brown them
and then braise them in some kind of flavorful liquid with some kind of tasty vegetables. And that's basically all there is to it.
Like what kind of tasty liquid?
So like you can do like red cooked, like soy sauce and rock sugar and rice wine. Mm-hmm. You can do like like chicken broth and white wine with herbs and potatoes and stuff.
I need formula for this.
Okay, well, I mean, that's basically it. Like,
but what's the mixture of like red cooked ingredients?
Oh, I can give you that.
Okay. Okay. Cool.
Yes.
Great. Okay.
It sounds, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds to me like, so just before we started taping, I gave Molly her birthday present, yeah. which was the thing that she's been asking me for probably pretty much since the first time we met.
I asked you for
like
this
18 years ago.
Seriously, though, I asked you for this on a show sometime this spring.
Yes.
I told you that I wanted for my birthday from you a collection of recipes from you.
Yeah, but listeners.
Of like your greatest hits.
I think you can confirm that Molly has asked me for this more than once.
Probably.
On the show.
Yeah.
And so I did this and I gave it to you like not 25 minutes ago.
and I'm already wanting
like
to add to it.
You're asking for volume two.
A little bit. Just a little bit.
Okay. Okay. That's fair.
Okay. If you grow leeks, if you know about blanching,
if you like pina coladas...
You should leave us a message on Facebook. It's facebook.com/spilledmilkpodcast.
Yeah, or you can also leave a comment at spilledmilkpodcast.com.
Yep. If you listen
to... If you want it to be like a little more private, you can email us at contact@spilledmilkpodcast.com.
Yeah, that sounds so personal.
Yeah, just getting your hands in the dirt like that.
Yeah.
You can also find us on a number of podcasting services, Stitcher, CastBox, Overcast, Google Play, Apple Podcasts. Please leave us a review on your platform of choice.
Mm-hmm. And you can find us on Instagram at Spilled Milk Podcast.
Our producer is Abby Circatella. Mm-hmm. And is that it? Is there anything else we tell people? Okay, cool.
That's it. Yeah.
So until next time, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk.
Matthew, stop rustling your papers.
Well, I mean, I've got an important message just in. The coat of arms of this show is just like two dumbbells.
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm Matthew Amster Burton.
And so sort of without making the connection, I asked you for like a lot of your meat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I've been called a meat smith so many times.
Yeah, yeah.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.